The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Good day to you one and all, and welcome to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. Every week I'll be discussing the pitfalls of the music industry and what it's like to work in this fickle business. This week I'm chatting to my brother Dan Hawkins, who is also the guitarist in The Darkness. I was really impressed with the way Dan had such composure in this situation. It must have been weird to be interviewed by a brother anyway, but I really loved his observations about the gigs that he's been to recently, and it was really inspiring to hear him sort of talking about production tricks and just saying stuff that you want to hear a big name producer saying. So it's really interesting stuff, and much less arsing around than I was expecting, but still a good laugh as well. Please to enjoy. Again. I'm gonna do the theme tune and then we'll start, okay? Justin Hawkins rides again.
Rides again.
Poor old Michael Finnegan, begin again. Right then, Danny, how you doing? You all right?
Yeah, not bad. Yourself? You all right?
Yeah, not bad. What have you been working
on? Love your shirt.
Thank you. This is an unusual collar, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. It's flying.
It feels like it's, stage wear, potential stage wear, if we were in a different band. what kind of band? The Beach Boys probably would wear something like this.
Yeah, I reckon so.
And you've gone full quo.
Hey, nothing wrong with the quo. But nothing wrong with the quo.
If you'll permit me an observation, a little bit of Ozzy Osbourne vibe on the glasses, maybe.
Why is it Ozzy Osbourne? I was going for John Lennon.
Sense of parting and glasses.
Yeah, but that's John Lennon. That's where Ozzy got it from. I was going for Jonathan Lennon.
Okay, so
unfortunately, I hit Lennon.
You've got Elton John Lennon. No, so. Okay, so you're doing John Lennon. Brilliant. Okay.
I'm just going 70s.
Okay, that's brilliant. So, and this is that period when he lived in New York and he wore denim all the time and he was sort of walking around going, "Oh, peace."
Yeah.
Good look though.
So,
I'm going to ask the first and most important question of the night. What are you going to wear for the summer festivals?
Oh. Well, I thought I'd push the boat out this time and go with a Thin Lizzy t-shirt and the black leather jacket.
Nice.
Some really tight blue flares.
When you're on stage and you're in a black leather jacket and it gets hot and sweaty, does there come a point when it's just too late to take it off because you're going to be just... You know what I mean? Like you get past the saturation of sweat in the t-shirt that is just can't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's after 30 seconds.
I wondered if it would be that.
We played that gig in Great Yarmouth. I'm sure you'll remember when we played
that
ridiculously hot and sweaty festival show. And I made the mistake of wearing a white Thin Lizzy t-shirt. Ah. I came off stage and basically it had gone completely pink. And the frontal area, because I wasn't working out as much as I am now, it literally looked like I had an arse coming out of outside out of my.
That's called a two-pack, isn't it? That's
yeah.
But you're not supposed to it's just two areas. Like where was the arse then? The crack was there, kind of thing. At the front near the belly button.
It's weird. Like I guess where the belly button was, it made a natural crease. Like, you know, the t-shirt was escaping inside it.
Why are you saying that in past tense? The belly button's still there.
It made a crevice. No, I mean, but it's not as prominent now. It's like the hole. It's not as big a hole. It's not. It was volcanic.
You've managed to fill it in.
It was volcanic. No, but there's not so much sort of magma around the outside these days.
Okay. I see. That's good.
So I'm actually thinking about giving the white T-shirt another go. You know.
When you have a period of touring coming up, what kind of exercises and stuff do you do to prepare for them?
Normally, 6 weeks before any sort of tour or festival season, I'll run 10K a day.
Yeah,
as you well know.
I know that.
And then we carry it on tour, don't we? And then by the end of a tour, I'm mega, mega fit. Yeah. And then just something inside me just downs tools. Even though I love running, I just seem to just... Yeah. I think maybe it's to do with not being able to prioritise myself when I'm home and the kids and studio work and, you know, house renovations ongoing. You kind of just put yourself to one side, don't you? So,
I did a couple of episodes about James Hetfield because he was saying that he goes on tour and then he comes home and is like... he's not the king of the castle anymore and he has to put the bins out and he sits there on his own with his cats. And I've thought about that quite a lot because, you know, especially in, like for me, like I stopped being on tour and then I just carry on doing whatever the exercises were. You know, my life is sort of a bit freer than yours, I think, isn't it? Like I can do more of my own stuff, really. But you have to go full James Hetfield, don't you? Like you put the bins out and you do forestry, bit of forestry, would you say?
Not so much anymore. I've realised that I shouldn't be allowed anywhere near any sort of power tool. And to be honest, I don't enjoy it so much now. I mean, I think maybe because the studio's finished at my house, so I kind of just want to be in there all the time. Yeah. Whereas before, it was like, you know, my studio was, as you well know, was basically a field shelter that stank of horse piss and had no air conditioning in the right places. It was boiling
especially
hot.
When it smelled like that, especially when Frankie was around as well.
Actually, it seemed to disappear when so things are a bit different, and also the mountain of work that's needed to be done on the studio and the house is finished now. So things are a bit easier, but you know, with three kids, you're just going to be you're going to be. I'm sure Mel saves up the bins while I'm away as well. I'm sure, you know, it just seems to be just... And everything that's broken just stays broken until I get back and fix it, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with Hetfield on that one.
Yeah, and I think he's, like, he's doing it the wrong way around because he says, like, he's got to remember, you know, like, so when he goes... Before he goes on stage, he has, like, a group check-in with all the crew and everyone. And one of them says to him, you are not, you know, a metal god. You're no more important than anybody else. What you're doing here is service to the people here who want to listen to the music. I'm like, that, you know.
That's pretty much the exact opposite of our team
talk. Yeah, exactly. Our team talk is like, let's get out there and kick as much ass as possible because we're f***ing awesome. Let's go! Yeah. Like that. And then it's, you know what I mean? Like,
forget about the bins. Forget about cutting the grass.
Because that is my point as well. Like the whole thing about playing a gig is like me and you get on stage, we're arsing about and we're playing our songs and we're doing our show. But what we're not doing is thinking about the bills that need to be paid, all the stuff that's broken at the houses that we live in, you know, and all the stuff that you have to deal with when you finish the tour. It's like you're really in the moment and it's proper. And like it's nothing to do with service to anybody else. It's kicking ass. That's the service that we're providing, you know. And when you do it with that sort of attitude, there's nothing better. I can't imagine wanting to go the other way with it, like to reduce the experience of being on stage so that it's the same as the rest of the sort of things that you have to deal with.
I mean, imagine how high pressure it would be if we actually gave a fuck what people thought.
What would we do?
Imagine like just like you're there to serve the people in front of you. It's like, you know, it's like being a waiter and carrying like, you know, like food to the king, isn't it? It's like you're gonna trip over and it's gonna land in his face and then you're gonna end up in the tower.
Forever, potentially. I'm gonna jump around a bit here, but when we're on stage And I say something like, electric guitar, my younger brother Daniel Francis Rossi Hawkins. And if I add something like that, what goes through your mind? Do you sort of go, oh, for fuck's sake, or do you enjoy it?
I just think, oh, yeah, state is quite cool.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll stop doing that one then.
Yeah, oh, damn it.
Because you always ride it out. You do this one. You go like... it's always that.
Just take it where you can.
Yeah,
you
know? That's true.
You know, it's I enjoy all that stuff. That's all the fun stuff.
Yeah,
that's all the good stuff. Do you know who I went to see the other day?
Let me guess.
You probably won't.
Is it a big band?
Yeah, you probably won't guess who I went to see them.
Did you go and see the 1975?
No, I didn't. No, but I would like to go and see them.
Yeah.
I went to see the Arctic Monkeys at the Emirates Stadium.
Oh, was the Hives on that gig as well?
They were, yeah.
Was it good?
Really great, really superb. The Hives were excellent. They just, what a band.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about that band, because that band is like, it's like if you listen to it without a discerning ear, it seems like they're just doing the same thing every song. But to sustain a career for that long and eke that much out of that concept is so impressive. And like the new stuff's really awesome as well. Like the riffs are amazing, I think. Really
good. They do a thing. I mean, the thing I really love about them is like that thing where the whole band come in just slightly late. Like, it's really powerful because it just gives that whole section a massive swing. And people, you know, you and I will know what they're doing there and know they're doing it on purpose. But most people will just think, crikey, that sounds huge, and they won't know why, you know.
Yeah.
It's and to see them do that and get that so perfect in a stadium and how effective that is. That was brilliant. But I have to say, the Arctic Monkeys are just, I mean, people go on about Alex Turner all the time, don't they? And and I've never, you know, I've always appreciated his lyrics, but the last time I checked in with the Arctic Monkeys was when they first came out, and I thought they were great then. And I didn't realise what a star that guy is. My God.
Yeah.
Talk about presence. Just love his vibe. And what I really liked is he wasn't playing the stadium game at all.
Right.
At all, but somehow managed to do that cool, sort of aloof thing, without, like, but still being worthy of being in the stadium. It's a fine line, isn't it? You know.
But he's just a natural performer, isn't he? I think it's more like if you've got that much charisma, it doesn't matter how big the room is. You don't need to do any of the sort of gesticulations and stuff to pull that off.
Their cameras with the lighting rig and the way that they shot the band was the best I've ever seen a band.
Oh, really?
And, you know, yeah. And it was really cool because I looked at the lighting rig and thought, oh, that's a bit weird. It's like not much of it. And but what they'd done is they'd put sort of Parkhands, old school kind of lighting rigs, just where it matters. And the kind of the videographers were shooting up from the stage, and they clearly chosen the two perfect spots. So they ran the whole thing with these 70s filters that were light traces, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was like watching a classic gig from the 70s, but in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just stunning. And the way they lined the band positions up with the cameras so that they'd catch the singer, the drummer in the screen at the back, and it was really well thought out and really well executed. It was one of the best lighting designs.
Production.
I've ever seen.
You call it a production, couldn't you?
We'll call it production
for now. Oh wow. The bits I've seen of it has been like I feel like he might be doing that Jack Brel, Scott Walker-y thing a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's come a bit away from that, as far as I understand. It's because they've gone back to the rockier thing. I mean, the set was out and out, you know, hit, rocker. It was
really?
there wasn't a ballad in it, I don't think.
How long did they play for?
Hour and 45, maybe.
Wow.
Hour and 40, you know. It was impressive.
Pretty concise.
You know, I have to say, though, like, I mean, you know, I had my earplugs because I value my hearing very much because being a professional studio man as well as a musician. But I noticed that I couldn't have stayed there if I'd taken my earplugs out.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to the sound guy. It's just what happens when you put a kind of indie band in a stadium. It's just mega noisy and kind of all mid-range. But saying that, no one else seemed to give two hoots and were loving it. It's, but for me, it was, you know, it was an onslaught, whereas rock is kind of designed to fill those holes in a stadium, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think it's to do with, like, the frequency ranges that their instruments are occupying, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah. I would say it's that simple, really. So what happens when you put two really loud combos on and scratchy guitars that play all the time?
But at least they're, at least they're playing through amps.
Don't get me wrong, I'm picking holes in it. Like, I think my ears would have adjusted after a couple of songs and it would have been fine anyway.
Yeah.
I thought they were awesome. It was really inspiring. Wow. It made me want to wear sunglasses.
That's good. Maybe I should put mine on.
Can you put yours on, please?
No, but I've got this headset microphone. Like, I mean, I don't need it.
Why aren't you wearing that?
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Ah, there you are.
We've got vomit on aisle 5.
Oh, brilliant.
How different things could have been.
Yeah, exactly. That's
actually, this is pretty much the same, isn't it, really?
Yes,
right,
actually,
right at this moment.
Eventually, it does write itself, yeah. Can I confess something to you on this?
Go on.
You might have got a press request in. A radio interview request, because...
What have you said no to now? Hang on, I'm getting another beer. I'm going to need one.
Oh, I'll tell you. Okay, so what what happened was, I got a request in for a regional radio thing. So I said,
Why am I the radio guy?
No, because I'm the national guy. I do national stuff and you do regional stuff, isn't it? I mean, I know probably could probably mix that up.
No,
but
you're the global guy. I'm the national guy.
Oh, okay. So
Frankie and Roo are the regional guys.
We'll have skipped you then and gone straight on to Frankie. Sorry. That's my bad. Yeah, so ignore that then. If you get an email about it, just ignore it.
What was it?
It's BBC Radio something or other. You know, BBC Radio's Staffordshire or whatever it was, isn't it? Totally pointless. Do you sometimes, I mean, not to be snobbish about these things, but sometimes we get sort of requests in... And this is how much of an arsehole I am. I'm not sure if I've actually told you this one before, but I got this one and it was like, our reach on Facebook is like 15 million or something like that. And there's hundreds of thousands on the YouTube and all this sort of stuff. I'm like, okay, well, I'll do that one then. Did a really long and excruciating interview and it was just like so boring. It was just worse than this, you know.
Wow! And then,
no, I mean, you must be bored of me. I'm just waffling there. But anyway, so I got to the end of the interview, and I thought, oh, I'll wait for that to come out. And I went and had a look at it. And by the time we did the gig that we were promoting, it's about 200 people had seen it.
Oh my god!
Complete waste of time.
I know. Well, we need to stop doing wastes of time.
We need to stop wasting the times. Do you think that when you do? Do you think that we're an albums band, aren't we? Do you think that we should be doing album campaigns, or do you think we should be doing like what other bands have? You know, do you think we should be behaving as though we've only just come out, or should we still be doing long form kind of long players?
So, are you saying that bands just behave like they're like every like an EP kind of?
Not like, even that. I think like if we. Because, you know, like when we used to do singles in the early days, we'd have things like B-sides and we'd shoot a video and it'd be physical formats, wouldn't there? We used to do a DVD single, CD single and a vinyl single. And they'd all have different sort of additional tracks on them. So they'd sort of be EPs. But then I think now if we were starting out, if we were dropping a single, we would just service a single to the streaming platforms and we'd maybe put a video on YouTube. Mm. That would be... That would be the extent.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. The whole thing's kind of, just because that was the way it always was, is it relevant now? And to be honest, I would say no.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it depends. It depends depends what you're trying to do. If we're trying to service our fan club and the fans that already buy our records, then I think they probably would be disappointed if we didn't do a long player, because it's something they look forward to and it's something they live with, becomes their soundtrack for a couple of years or a couple of weeks if it's a shit one. You know, and it's so I think they would miss that. But then I think also, if we did kind of change the way we did things more to like an EP or kind of singles-based approach, I think we probably would get more traction and they'd enjoy the excitement of quality product rather than, you know, throwing loads of money at one big thing and it being thinned out. I mean, put it this way, I think the approach to how we do things should and is going to change because I don't think it really works for us anymore, you know?
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, it's Jenny and Bill from Simple Bath and Kitchen. If you're anything like us, you want to be able to trust a company while getting a great value.
That's why at Simple Bath and Kitchen, we focus on what really matters. You, value that's not hidden, and a team you can trust.
With designs that are tailored to your needs and honest, upfront pricing, we make your dream kitchen or bath attainable.
Discover the team Columbus has trusted over the last 15 years.
Simple Bath and Kitchen, where our home is your home.
SimpleBathAndKitchen.com.
I was thinking about, because like, for a little while, I think we were doing records, and the idea of doing a long player is that it's something to hang a tour on, because your audience would come to, and they'd expect to hear like some tracks from the new thing interspersed with the old stuff that they've always loved, you know. But I've noticed that when we do a tour after we've released a record, like by the end of the tour, we're lucky if there's two songs from the new record in the set, you know, because you sort of try stuff out and, you know.
That's true, but that's down to, like, I think that's down to a lot of things and not having time to write something that we really like
But at the same time, it's like, I think everyone on the stage has a different perception of how a song's going down. So, like, if we're doing a new... On the last tour, or last bit of touring, I think the one that was weird was Sticky Situations, because that's quite an ambitious song to pull off. There's some, you know, slide playing in it, and it's got to be exactly right, because it's that 3-4 type thing, isn't it? 6-8, whatever it is. And then you've got to really be able to pull that off to make it land. And sometimes we'd play it, and I'd be like, yeah, that was amazing, guys, well done. And you'd be like, what? But as soon as there's someone's expressed a what, then it sort of gradually poisons the band's overall enjoyment of playing that song, isn't it? Sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
And then things end up getting dropped, you know.
Yeah, do you know what? It's one of those things. I think you've just got to have. I don't know how this relates to the initial question, but I was thinking about the initial question just then, about the albums thing. And do you know what, like, most of my favorite songs of all time are album tracks, you know.
Yeah,
they're like they're the ones that really get me, and you know, if everything you do is, you know, built to be a single in one way or another, like, or just, you know, make an impression, sometimes it's the tracks that aren't, you know, meant to, that are people's, well, definitely my favorites, and you just wouldn't get them. I mean, I think sometimes we look at a body of work a bit too closely and probably spend a bit too much time on it, and then in other ways we don't spend enough time writing songs, but we spend probably too long making the records, because it's almost like we should just have one out every, if we're an albums band, have one out every year and don't worry about it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's like
But I don't think you need an album to justify a tour when you have that kind of fan base, you know, like the fan base that's going to buy albums, the long players and stuff. But I suppose it's for the sake of promoters to have an excuse to put the band in the rooms in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, but then they'll always find an excuse. And if you've if you've released kind of four EPs in that year, or even three, then there's a reason.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason at all. There always is. Yeah. If you release like one of your videos, you actually make a good one, and the tune's really good and exciting too, then that's a reason to do a tour.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's not like I think the big thing is making an awesome video for a tune that we all absolutely love.
Yeah,
you know, and like not. See, this is the thing about the album thing and whittling down the limited budget that we have from whatever, you know, label is releasing it. Bit my tongue there. You know, just like, no, that's not going to do. We're going to need $100,000 just to make the video or fuck off, you know, and that's it. Because that's what it takes, you know. And like, screw the... You know, okay, that means that's the whole budget for everything done in the first instant, then then that's it. Tough. Yeah. That's what we do.
Yeah. Frankie had the idea of starting a Kickstarter campaign to make a video. I actually think that's genius.
It's a good idea, yeah?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What do people actually, the people who kickstart these things, what do they get out of it?
I think I don't
money?
Know.
Do they get money out of it?
Well, how would they get? I don't know how. I think just so their favorite band that they tell people about doesn't have a shit video. So,
you know. That's how we should sell it. We would actually raise the money.
You know,
please.
We're your favorite band, The Darkness, and
we are about to make yet another shit video.
Unless,
that unless you would wanna, actually. That is actually the only way I would be comfortable framing it, because it is a bit
true,
like, oh, please, can we have some money? Because, fucking, you know, even though we're international rock stars, we can't afford to make a video. You know, it's like
it's
fucking...
The band will never put its hand in its own pocket.
Individual
pocket. There's no way.
I love it.
Fuck that noise.
Yeah, it's not like... by the way, this is our last resort. We were talking about remortgaging our homes, but, you know, have you seen the interest rates lately?
So. that's not going to work. No. I feel like I would... because I'm a singer, my approach to it is a bit less pragmatic. So I'd be like... every time there's a video shoot, I'm like, okay... I'm not going to come to the video shoot unless there's a concept and a storyboard and a shot list. And then my list of demands gets a bit longer every time we do an album campaign, and it doesn't stop the videos from being shit.
I know, but to be fair to you, though, those are the things that you expect, you know, like, and that's what we always had. That's our introduction. Even when we paid the $10,000 ourselves to make the Growing On Me video, we had the shot list. Everyone knew exactly what they were doing. It was done properly, you know. And we've just, you know, we've just not been able to do that. I'll tell you, the only swerve from that really was when we worked with those guys in up north and on the Rock and Roll Desert video. They did a good job considering what we were trying to pull off.
Yeah,
they actually did a pretty good job, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing about that video is very, very solid idea. You know, the idea of, for those of you watching who don't know that video, the idea being that the guitars are so loud that it makes our wigs fly off, and then all of our clothes. Or as many clothes as the respective members of the band were prepared to take off.
For me, obviously, I wasn't within a six-week period of the tour.
Dan actually remained fully clothed, and in fact some of the clothes from the other members landed on him.
It's weird, all around the front arse area. It's really strange.
Just swallowed. Was that a fly or something? Fucking hell, weird. Something just, this thing was in my mouth. What's that?
That is halitosis, my friend.
In its physical physical manifestation of halitosis.
Yeah, it is. It's the white stuff that comes from the back of your throat.
All right, well, I'll put that over here and research it more later.
With the others. Put it in the Petri dish with the others.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, so what do you want to talk about today?
Just some load of shit. What about... I don't know. I don't know, really.
Do you want to talk about...
Music? Music.
Let's talk about music. Okay, so we've covered a couple
I just finished Chris's album, Chris McCabe. From that's finally done and dusted. It was the major guinea pig for the studio before the big boys come in.
Did you charge him guinea pig rates, or was it
the actual guinea pigs? Yeah, brilliant. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
He's got a few people lined up. He's basically, because he did really well with his last band, he's got a home for the album already if he wants it. And there's a few people really into it. So
that's great.
It'll fly. But it went really well, and it was nice to really get to grips with the sound of the studio, you know what I mean? Rather than going through all of that with us. But it was long hours in the end. Really, really... Because just me, you see. I can't wait to work with Softy as my assistant engineer.
Yeah.
I've waited a long time for an assistant engineer. And a Neve. And this is the year I get both.
Wow. Amazing. So you're going to do the next Darkness record in there. What else is coming up?
I'm going to be doing some other stuff. There's a few things in the pipeline. I'm kind of doing some writing with some people.
Cool.
For Nashville. Nashville stuff. And there's a film on the horizon that we have been asked to do the soundtrack of.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I remember that email.
Yeah. See, I wonder how negotiations are going there.
Yeah.
Bits and bobs. Obviously, I've got to mix Chris's album. Mixing some stuff for you, hopefully soon.
Yep.
And also, I still have, you know, this your solo proposition. I think we still haven't, like, you know, we still need to start working on that or finishing that, you know.
I think we need to... because I want to do an experimental solo album of some sort. I'm not sure. When people say experimental, I think that just makes your existing audience go, and they get,
they get
a bit nervous, don't they?
I was just thinking, like a couple of the songs that we did on the last session were kind of like feed into that kind of that area of stuff that you like to do, plus a couple of things that you've played me already.
Yeah.
But then I also think, you know, there's those tunes sort of, like, I think as The Darkness, we need to open up a bit more to something different anyway.
I know, that's what I was thinking, because it's like, if I can't see the point of doing a solo record if there's no need to do it, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, if we're doing a Darkness record that sounds like The Darkness always sounds, you know, then I think I'd probably want to explore some different, you know, ways to arrange songs and stuff like that. But if everyone's open to it, and it feels like they are, we can probably do something a bit more, you know.
I 100% think we should. I think sometimes we sort of, we sort of miss the mark a little bit on some of the ideas that we have that aren't in, like, Darkness mode. We don't spend actually enough time, as a producer, I'm at fault here, by not recognising and going, no, this can be really amazing, not just something that ends up being a bit weird and a bonus track. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a bit more effort needs to be spent on turning those really out there song ideas into classic songs.
I mean, I suppose I want to go back to the that question about album cycles and whether a body of work like an album is relevant. And then I love that thing you said about how you wouldn't have like the more exploratory album tracks that are less known, the ones that you really love, if you're approaching things so that every single song has to be a single. But to be honest, I think, do you reckon that where we've fallen short on our out there ideas is because even though the ideas are out there, we're still trying to pull it back into sort of being, you know, what we normally do, what we think our audience expects and wants from us, sort of thing?
No, I don't think so. Like, I actually think it's just a case of not investigating the song as like, okay, put it this way, like this thing I just did with Chris, it was really like, I felt like I could really, I was much fussier and not afraid to scrap things and go back to the beginning and really pushing him like lyrically and you know, just going again and again and again until it was something that was amazing rather than like something that just was like that's great. 'Cause I think the problem we have is like, I've always said it always comes down to time. Like, and the fact that it takes such an effort for us all to get together in a room and also getting those four egos to get something that like want to get that are happy with something over the line, you know, from an external point of view, like I, as a producer, you're just great to get something that's working and that is actually going to be finished. Yeah. But I don't think like that anymore. Like,
yeah, because
I
think in the past there's been like, got to get it over the line because there's a tour booked. That's the case, isn't it?
Literally it. But but I'm not working like that anymore. Like the great thing is when you are making art, not for anyone else, because otherwise we're doing that thing where we're looking into the audience and we're being servants, and that doesn't make fucking good performances or good art. It's like, it has to be something that has truly blown us away and we can't stop listening to. You know, you finish it and you want to hit play again, you know.
Yeah. It's there's no rules to it either, because it's sort of, you can't even say that spending too much time on a thing stops you from having that effect, you know, because it can be a really lavish production or it can be something as simple as an acoustic song, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. But the time element I'm talking about is really is that there isn't a looming deadline, that it, you know, and to allow yourself the time to do what's right, you know, to explore what's right and not settle, I think is the thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust my instincts a bit more and not just try. What's the point in getting something over the line?
Yeah,
it's fucking pointless.
That's always
pointless.
Sometimes, you know, like, you know, when you see like other bands in studios, and then you're looking at like, sometimes they have a whiteboard and it says something like rhythm guitars, and then it'll say acoustic guitars, and it'll say lead guitars, and it'll say lead vocals, backing vocals, drums, bass, and keys. And then something like percussion or additional stuff, right? And then it has a column like across the board, and then
exactly what you're talking about.
And it says the song title at the top. And then the way you see a lot of bands producing records is that they populate that grid with ticks to say that they've done the very, you know, all the relevant bits. And I'm, whenever I see that, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, because
it's,
I feel
so
like
funny.
It's
so funny you should say that, right? Okay, and I'm sorry, I'm going on about Chris and his album.
Yeah,
I literally just finished it, and it's turned out really amazing. We had this exact same fucking conversation, and it was because after we did the first block of work, he came in with like, you know, 10 tracks that everyone was just basically bass, drums, guitar, guide vocal, whatever. And he'd gone away and he'd basically worked out the track listing for the album, you know, whether or not it'll end up being that. And then he made this list with artwork and everything, like from start to finish, like the album and what needed to be done on it. And I'm like, right, okay, brilliant, fantastic, we've got a list. And so I said, right, so, what should we do then, like, for day one? And I'm like, well, you brought a list in, we're going to we're going to work through the list. You know, I don't care what song you want to sing, what, you know, what guitar part. And he said, I'm not going to look at the list. I'm going to look at the song title and we're going to bring it up and we're going to work on it until it's finished. And do you know what? That was so freeing because there wasn't like a fucking massive chart, you know, because sometimes, again, when you've got a deadline and you've got like, you know, 15 songs with millions of parts to be finished and all that kind of stuff, the chart, and it's like, that's just stressful looking at a chart of unfinished things.
But how it's weird because the thing is, like, it should be a daunting task to take an idea from conception to realization. It's not supposed to be easy, you know. It's not supposed to be, because nothing worthwhile is, you know. Even like the simplest songs, you've still got to realize them, you know, and you still got to get the performance that matters. And it's not ideally about, do a definitive version of it, really.
It's not about you know, checking things off on a checklist, you know. And this is my point. It's like, I loved having a list because it was like, because sometimes if you're tired and like, and you go, what should we work on? And then you look at the chart and the amount of stuff that needs to be done. That's just depressing, isn't it? What you want to do is just work on something until it's finished and just keep building on it and building on it, and something inspires something else and that inspires something else, and then it's done and then you move on, and then you go back and listen to it and it has a magic because you were just in the moment the entire time, you know. Not flitting about from like, oh, let's okay, we'll put that on the whole album, that guitar sound.
Exactly.
It's like,
I mean, I've experienced it in a lot of different places. Like the checklist chart thing is something that happens in those kind of sort of studios that are like hit factories, really. And often it's not just like you know, do a rhythm guitar part. It's like the amps are permanently set up in those places, and it's just you choose whether you want the microphone on axis or off axis, and you have a fiddle with the thing, and it's like, it's always the same cabs, it's always the same tone. They know it works, you know. So in those situations, it's kind of like, well, I get it, because you're going to make a lot more records. You might not, you know, and you're probably going to sell loads of records depending on who the artists are. But, you know, the exploration of doing like on a song by song basis of just doing what the song needs and, you know, fiddling around with the sounds and that, you get more of an eclectic sonic experience at the end of it, don't you?
Exactly.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, it's Jenny and Bill from Simple Bath and Kitchen. If you're anything like us, you want to be able to trust a company while getting a great value.
That's why at Simple Bath and Kitchen, we focus on what really matters. You, value that's not hidden, and a team you can trust.
With designs that are tailored to your needs and honest, upfront pricing, we make your dream kitchen or bath attainable.
Discover the team Columbus has trusted over the last 15 years.
Simple Bath and Kitchen, where our home is your home.
SimpleBathAndKitchen.com.
I wish I could work like that as a producer, like have that set thing, but I just can't help myself. Like, so Roo's new drum kit arrived today and he allowed me to unbox it so I can set it up ready for him to come in tomorrow and have a run through and muck about. And then 4 hours later, like what I should have done and what Softy was saying, like, oh, it's great. Yeah. Just stick your new stereo ribbon overhead over it, kick the snare, and you're off. And then I just can't help myself. It's like every time there's an opportunity to record, especially drums, it's time to try something new and, like, you know, I wonder, like things I've been thinking about for ages, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot to be gained from just having a standard setup, tracking and mix-wise, that you always go to. But where's the fun in that? I mean, you just stop, don't you? You just stop doing anything different. And, like, you know,
And also I think, like, when I think about guitar tones, I just think, like, you know, part of the the character of a song is the sound of a guitar player struggling with his amp. You know what I mean? Like, because you play it differently, don't you, depending on what you're playing through, and it's sort of like, and it adds something to the performance, I think. You know?
There's one of my favourite guitar sounds that I got with The Darkness was on a song called Hammer and Tongs in on Last of Our Kind, and it was through a beaten up old Fender Twin that we borrowed off David Viner, and I tried using a Coles on, but like not on the speaker, just kind of like
in the room somewhere.
Off and somewhere, yeah, and like and I just remember thinking, this is it. This is just that authentic Rolling Stones, brilliant but tone.
That's my favourite stuff as well. Like whenever you get loads of room,
absolutely. Room, you know. But I was just, that's absolutely brilliant. And Softy was the first album Softy worked, and we were looking at each other, this is it. That's the sound. And then like we went into when we finished those guitars, went in, looked, and the microphone, I hadn't tightened the mic stand enough, and it just sagged. But between setting the mic up and actually, you know, hitting record, it just sagged and was just facing straight at the floor.
And that's the sound.
And that was like literally, if you went out of your way to try and make something as shit as it could possibly sound, that's what you would do. You would just fire the microphone at the floor, about 4 feet away from it. And that's the sound. So
amazing.
Terrible. Yeah. So
I remember when you did that guitar part and it was like you did a lead pass and I think on the demo it just sounded like you were drunk. And then when you did the real pass and it was like, it doesn't sound drunk enough. I think you should get some real ale in and try again.
I've never made that mistake again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Do you reckon that's the Rolling Stones' thing? Do you think just being drunk and that's it?
And other things, I think.
Yeah, no, I was being...
Easy on them there. I think.
Was a bit, yeah. How was your toilet break?
It was great. Mm. It was...
Did you go to the toilet that was in the... Because you've got... In the control room, there's a toilet in the corner, isn't there? And then there's the vocal booth in the other corner, right?
Yeah, you haven't been here for a while, have you?
Yeah. Well, I remember it from when we did the karaoke and you ballsed up the key change. The key change of My Heart Will Go On, or whatever that song is called. Just to, for those, I'll send Jenny the footage to cut this in. But so it came. It was getting towards the the key change of My Heart Will Go On. The near, far, wherever you are, near, far, wherever you, that bit there. And as it was coming up, Dan was going, "I got this." And then
on my.
And then when the key change came in, woo. At no point did My Heart Go On have a woo in it that just. And then the best bit was that you're running around, you're really upset with yourself, and you're just like, oh.
I got this! Go on, Dad,
you got it!
Yeah. Just it's common, sheer panic and disappointment.
But you don't get that from, you know. Presumably, you don't get that from a Celine Dion show, though. You don't see that anguish at having ballsed up the key change. You just don't see it.
But she does that. She waits until she comes off stage. She doesn't do it on stage. That's all.
Mm. You know, it's very visceral with you, isn't it? You can really.
I have to say, look, but you know, I'm singing Celine Dion, so
yeah,
it's. I'm pushing anyone's boundaries. Yeah, being pushed when you're doing Dion.
But you really felt confident about that key change because I remember you saying, "I got this." You know,
it was going so well up to then, but then I realised actually it's because it was all in my very limited range.
You know, my favourite thing about your range is that sometimes when you're meandering off towards the top of it, you get carried away and it's like. Emma! And then you realise you're not going to get the next note, so you go an octave down. It's like, too much. You really withdraw from it, and it's always brilliant. It's always brilliant. Mate, know your limits, you know. That's the secret of rock and roll. Just know your limits, but never push them, you know.
Never push your limits. Never in rock and roll.
Never. That's it. Rock and roll is all about knowing, you know. It's comfort zone. Rock and roll is the comfort zone. And that's where we
The album title. That's the album title.
Comfort zone. That's actually really good. And then why is it just a picture of a chair?
It's just, yeah. The
comfort zone. The new album from the darkness. And then that, but actually that's brilliant because then that can be the experimental record that we want to do, you know. We've got
the twist would be like the sofa has got like police tape, do not cross on it. There you go.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Or like just where you'd normally plonk your ass after a long day doing forestry, there's a spring coming up through the thing, but then it sort of looks a bit like a medieval torture device, but a really chintzy one.
Actually,
Comfort Zone. That is not the worst title we've ever thought of, to be honest.
Yes, definitely not.
One of the so we're doing the 20th anniversary of Permission to Land this year, obviously, and our dear friend Robert Shaw dug out all those handwritten lyrics and album concepts and all that sort of stuff. And on that list, do you remember the list? You looked at it recently. The list of potential album titles for Permission to Land. Yeah. But never made it. One of them was the first top of the list. Thank you. This will suffice for me. Now, if you please, some sex for my friends, which wouldn't have aged well, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guitar architecture. That had to be one of yours. That's one of yours. Of course, you're going to say it's all right. What was the other one?
I think the reason we would have got rid of that was because it sounds like a Steve Vai solo album kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what would, I'm just trying to think what the artwork would be there. Would it be like an architect just drawing a guitar or what? Is that too on the nose?
Are you spelling it out? Spelling it out. Another album title.
Spelling it out has been one of your ballad suggestions more than once.
Like, really spelling it.
I think L-O-V-E, spelling it out. Or sorry, I don't know. Maybe that's a disco version. What were the other ones on there? I think one of them was... I wonder if I can get it up on my phone, actually. Okay, I've got the list.
All right, here we go.
This is a good one. Death in Both Ears.
I've always loved that.
That's a brilliant one, isn't it?
That was originally what Bareback was going to be called, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, it was called that for a bit.
I like that one. I don't know why this is on the list, but this is in your handwriting for sure. Beast.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty good, but I think we probably rejected that because it's too sort of fantasy art medieval. And like the... I mean, not for you, obviously. Nothing can be too medieval. Hence, the one.
It's not
here,
medieval enough.
Hence, Excalibur.
Oh, another winner.
Another winner. Here's one that I always liked: Rock Bottom, because then the artwork is very obviously, you know, a sculpture of an ass.
Yeah.
And it really lent itself to a lot of, like, we were talking about when we come on stage, and then that sculpture is, you know, rendered huge as a set opening thing, and the buttocks,
green smoke.
Open green smoke, we walk out. It would have been amazing. We could still do that sometime. We probably shouldn't do this one though. Apocalypso, which sounds like
that's terrible.
Yeah, like there's a nuclear war, and then.
By the way, the reason why we should have done Rock Bottom is because we could have followed it up with Pebble Dash.
Oh, brilliant. Sonic Cathedral. Very culty, that's actually.
That's awful, though, isn't it? That's like,
I thought you were going to say awesome, then.
No, I don't like that.
Okay, well, if you don't like that, how's this? 21st Century Foxtrot. That is not very good.
Why?
Here's a really great one, based on the fact that you can't, there's no copyright on album titles as a rule, you know. So, Brothers in Arms.
That bad, we were pushing pretty hard for that, I seem to remember.
I like it, yeah. It's really good. Because
like,
if you can get a bit of their royalties by accident. Yeah.
That was actually one of the things we said. It's like, but what if people buy the wrong album?
But then you don't want to end up with their tax bill, though. That's the thing. Bad Tennis.
Truly awful.
That had to be one of Ed's.
Mm. I was just thinking that's got to be one of Ed's. Yeah. Not that Ed is the master of awful, because he's actually quite good at that
Ed's,
kind of thing.
No, Ed's amazing at that sort of stuff. I mean, all of us are hit and miss, but his has a particular flavour. This is definitely one of Ed's, and actually one of his best ever. Taxi.
That's great.
It's awesome. It's not first album stuff, but it's really good.
Yeah, it came quite close to being that, didn't it, as well?
And Taxi's good.
It's really good.
I mean, at the risk of doing yet another on-the-nose visual.
I can see it. I know exactly what's in your mind.
It could be us. The Hailing artwork is us. Well, I was going to say in a taxi.
Right. Like, no, one of us would be driving the taxi, the three of us would be, you know, and then... Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as a set piece, and that's easy really to achieve as well. And you could also make it a stage thing, like Rob Halford coming on stage on a motorbike. We come on stage in a taxi. And if you're in New York, it's a yellow one. You know, we could mix it up. It'd be really fun. Still, I think, worth revisiting. This one is not worth revisiting. This is called Trained Professionals.
So
we were young. It was a different time.
Trained professional. It definitely comes as it's so bad. It just doesn't get
it's
good.
It's so
though,
bad.
It?
It's
no,
bad.
It doesn't.
That's what it is.
It's bad.
Sex Mundum. Which is
that's
a town.
It's got to be another one of it.
I think that was yours, actually.
Sex Mundum? No way.
Actually, it can't be yours.
I have nothing but bad memories of Sax Mundum.
Okay. Permission to Land. Second from last on the list, that is. And then, possibly the worst album title suggestion I've ever seen. I don't even know if I can say this. Kumquat. Like the fruit, but with C-U-M at the beginning.
That's a Frankie one. It's
yeah,
got to be.
That was, I think, yeah.
That's terrible. That's terrible. Really awful.
Yeah, not the best, really. So yeah, what could have been?
I've been approving all the audio for the Permission to Land 20 thing, and also the DVD release too. I've had to go through all that stuff. I have to say, the best thing. Is the EPK that we did for Warners.
Oh, yeah.
That's on there. And it's just... If you wanted just to sum up what we were like at the time and what was going on, that's just everything you could possibly want. It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I was literally... Because it was quite a rigmarole trying to find a DVD, and I was under time pressure and I was busy on the album session and finally managed to get it together, and I watched it with Schiltz, happened to be in down at that point, putting some bass on that album, and we watched it together, and I woke him up and told him to come and watch it because I was just crying with laughter. It was absolutely amazing. You've never seen anything so rock and roll. It's like...
Well, what kind of stuff then? What do you mean?
Well, cause, you know, the main reason that, you know, because I could have easily just gone like, yeah, don't worry, just put it out. But these days, you kind of just have to check that we're not going to get cancelled, you know, true. Like, because, you know, things were a little bit different back then, you know, like in some respects, as far as certain things go. But it was just awesome, you know. It was like... That whole EPK, all the interviews that were done for it.
And that stuff that Abrahams filmed, or?
I think he might have filmed some of it, but and then some of it would have been would have been done by Warners, because I mean, we're fresh off, like, we're in America and Australia, and we've been pulled to one side and begrudgingly made to do this thing for Warners. You know, that comes across really clearly.
That's one thing I can so hungover. I can remember that stuff, and I remember I was really just not giving it quite 100%. I think in a couple of places, and I remember you going like, "You can't put that in."
No, but that's another thing, that this is you're going to enjoy this.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a different thing, because we did another one. It was basically we'd landed. You won't remember it because I don't remember it, and it was, we'd landed in like Australia, and then like jet lagged, clearly immensely hungover.
That doesn't sound like us.
Still drunk, and etc. But it's just brilliant. Like, it's so funny. Like, yeah, it's just, I'm like, my God.
Well, what kind of stuff, though? You've got to tell me.
Well, you have to watch it.
Oh, don't make me watch it. Come on, tell me.
Yeah, it was good. It was just like, there's just so much attitude. Just so, like, just, it was just like, we just clearly just had so much disdain for everyone and everything, and just couldn't care less, and wanted just to cause as much trouble as possible, you know. There was absolutely no one was saying or doing the right thing ever, you know. And Ed was definitely so hungover or drunk, and one of them, like, he's literally like, it's like the one thing he says, like, in his really dark glasses. But it's cool. It's like, that is a proper rock and roll band.
I remember when we played in Dubai, and I don't think they'd had many rock concerts before we went there. And so, like, the promoter of the show that we were doing were like, "Oh, it's the Dubai, you know, horse racing thing. Let's go to that." And then so we went. We went there, and like, this is a country where I don't even think you're allowed to drink. You know, you weren't allowed to drink under certain circumstances before we got there. And I remember somebody asking Ed if he wants a drink, and he asked for two drinks. He wanted like a like in this really fancy like horse racing thing. He's like, "I want to get vodka and double vodka and Red Bull, and also can I get a beer?" And sort of like, so making him buy him two drinks, and like, it must have been astronomically expensive as well. And I was like, "Two drinks, eh, Ed?" And then he started to say something, and then he got it wrong, and he ended up saying, "It's the taste." And I always just think that is such an Ed thing. It's the taste. So then we made like the Mr. Edo Japanese edition t-shirts. Do you remember that?
That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it had like, because all the Japanese fans used to call Ed Mr. Edo. So then we got somebody to draw, to make the, you know, Japanese inscription Mr. Edo as it would be written in Japanese. And then his face, and then next to it, says, "It's the taste." That was like 10 years later, I think. It just never.
Did it really have that?
It just never. It did. Yeah, that t-shirt had "It's the taste" on it. Just a picture of Ed's face, and it said, "It's the taste." I love that one. That's the best.
Oh, gosh.
Stuff like that's really good, I think. In jokes.
Really awesome.
Yeah. In jokes are the best ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones. Mm. Those are the ones.
Those are the ones that really cross over a lot of time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Columbus, mark your calendars. Concert for a Cause, presented by the Columbus Auto Dealers, is coming to Kemba Live on Saturday, August 9th. Catch multi-platinum country star Tyler Hubbard and powerhouse trio Runaway June live for one powerful night of music. All proceeds benefit the Butterfly Guild at Nationwide Children's Hospital, the Ryan and Christina Day Fund, and the Starhouse Foundation. Get your tickets now at cbusconcertforacause.com. One night, two incredible acts, three amazing causes. Don't miss out.
Have you seen this stuff? I think, did you get sent the AI stuff?
Oh, yeah, I did. I sent some of that to you, in fact.
Oh, okay, cool.
I sent you the ABBA one.
Yeah, there's an ABBA one that's got me and Freddie Mercury and ABBA. Is that right?
That's actually really, that one's really good. The first one I saw, I was sent, it was you being made to sound like Freddie Mercury, but it just sounded like you with a lisp. And yeah. I was like, well, if that's, you know, if that's it, then that's pretty rubbish. But the second one that came through was the ABBA song.
Oh, when all is said and done.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I really thought it was impressive.
I'm just going to have a look at this
how
now.
How they did that.
Deep inside. Side. All of us can see.
Wait, is that what I do? Do I go side?
Just say.
Deep inside. It sounds more like The Killers somehow.
Yeah, but a little bit, but you know. You and me, we fly
instinctively. It's interesting how they've done that, because it seems like it's almost got the timbre.
Hey, listen, put it this way, it's a lot closer than when they tried to, you know, do it the other way around.
What did they try and do the other way around?
Didn't they make you sound like Freddie Mercury?
Oh, I didn't see that one, though.
Yeah. Something that just like sounded like...
Okay, The Killer Queen, is it?
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
So then, this is a cover of Killer Queen with me singing it.
Let them make cakes, she says, just like Marie Antoinette, a building, a remedy.
Sounds like Jellyfish.
The net. The net's very you.
Which one? Oh, yeah, okay.
Antoinette.
Yeah, they've gone for the higher thing as the lead there. It works. That works.
It's interesting.
Sort of. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I wonder what they'll make of my Celine Dion cover.
It'd be like, they should do Celine sings the hits of Dan Hawkins.
That is actually something I'd like to... I'd love to have the AI program so I can put me on Titanic.
Yeah.
See what that sounds like?
Yeah.
It'd be so good.
And then it'll get to the key change and then the AI will freak out and go,
like, ooh!
Near, far, wherever you are!
Even if the AI is accurate, that's what it will do.
The AI will definitely duck out of that high note.
There aren't enough megabytes.
No, we don't have the technology. That's the problem. The computers aren't ready for it. Near, far, wherever. That is it.
Oh, it's nice to be able to do karaoke again. I kind of backed out of it for years, and after that incident in Old Street where I was booed off.
Oh, what happened there? I think you're going to tell me the story about Delilah, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So back in the day, when karaoke first came out, there were a few karaoke bars in London that were probably getting like 200 or 300 punters in, and they had an actual stage, and you'd put your name down as you go in, out of a tombola, they would pick your name out, and then it was a captive audience. It was like just a gig running all night, not like these days where they're sort of shoved away in the corner and you sort of try to, you know, or they're given their own individual booths for their parties now, aren't they? But anyway, so I may have been a bit worse for wear, and I was with Liz Horsman, who I was doing session work for at the time, session guitaring for, and she was like, I'm putting my name down for Cyndi Lauper or something like that. Like, and she convinced, like, totally pressured me into putting my name down. And it's like, oh, God, well, I suppose I do an all right Delilah. by Tom Jones. So I put my name down, and then wherever it's just dawned on me now, she might have actually paid to get me up the list. I wouldn't put it past her, actually. Anyway, my name got called, but you know, I was pretty. This is the problem. I was pretty confident going into it.
Yeah, that is an issue for you. Yeah,
it's confident choosing the likes of Tom Jones and Celine Dion. Anyway, that's where I see myself as a singer.
Yeah, okay. Somewhere between Tom Jones and Celine Dion.
unfortunately, that really isn't. That's not reality. Mm. It's like I'm like one of those people that go onto X Factor and they're just completely convinced they've got this, yeah. And then the build up and everything is just like, and then the reality is shocking.
You don't got this.
Anyway, so I turned out I didn't got that. Before I even got to any of the difficult stuff, because it came straight on, and it was in a key that I didn't recognise. It wasn't in you know, and it was already in that range where like. Like, you know, trying to go up and then realizing I got nowhere to go, so like coming off my, and within 30 seconds I was booed off stage.
Booed off
by about 250 people. Booed off. It's so embarrassing. And like, you know, oh god,
that must hurt. I'm so sorry.
It was, because what hurt the most is that if it had been in the right key, I would have completely nailed
it. Yeah, that's the pain. Completely. That's where the pain's coming from. Yeah, because they got the key wrong. That's it.
They got the key wrong.
Got the key wrong. Yeah. Do you remember? Do you remember when? do you remember when when Dad took us to look at some studio gear, because the guy that was selling a mixing desk and maybe some speakers and other bits and pieces, maybe a bit of outboard gear if we're lucky, he was throwing all that stuff away because he'd discovered the advent of the MIDI disc MIDI file player, and realized that he could go and do gigs with just the accompaniment from this MIDI file generating machine. And he'd just be able to sing along to it. And so me and you were like in there going, all right, yeah, well, you know, we probably want to use the desk to record music really anyway, so that it doesn't, you know, probably not, the MIDI disc thing isn't for us really. The MIDI file player. And then he started doing a version of Black Magic Woman, like leaning on the desk that he was trying to sell us. Do you remember this? And then, got a black magic woman! Like no microphone, just like really yelling it into our faces. And then you and I both knew we could look at each other and be like, oh, like that, but we couldn't look at our dad because we knew that he'd be like, having this incredulous look on his face. Do that face again, that's exactly it.
He's like,
yeah, he'd be like,
in his head he'd be going like, oh my god, this is awful, but his face wouldn't have been able to stop.
Yeah, his face would just be saying that. Exactly what's in his head. It's just
we couldn't
look at him. Oh my god. He was really going for it. Oh. Microphones are for wimps anyway, aren't they?
They are overrated.
Yeah,
true.
Did you mean that thing about the U-47 not using a pop shield?
Have you actually got it?
Yeah, it's in the box. I didn't open it yet, but
yeah, I'd probably keep that in that box and return it. The only thing I'd say about it is when I was cobbling together the mix of those demos.
Yeah,
It's got a great tone and everything, but. Like every single thing that you sang, I had to volume match because it was out. But it was out of the realms of any compressor being able to deal with it. Because, and it stands, it's obvious, isn't it? Like it doesn't have a valve in it. It just and it handles really loud SPL and it sort of backs off. So the volume changes is just extraordinary. But once you've actually evened all that stuff out. It's great sounding. And do you know what? Pop, you know, any producer or mix engineer who can't deal with a pop sound shouldn't be in the job. It's not a problem. pop away, mate.
I always think, you know, put a bit of compression on it, let nature take its course.
Still, after all these years.
That was always my thing. Turn everything up, get a compressor across the top of it, let nature, let, I mean,
you know,
the, only the strong will survive,
great?
You know?
You know what sounded great was, I mean, and I really hope they sounded great as well, with the original demos that you and I did. Like, no word of a lie. I actually messaged Mike Marsh and just said, just what a great job you did, because do you know what? Some of them sound better than the record.
Oh, really?
It might be. Yeah, I mean, like, we're talking like...
I was recording, you know, that stuff. I mean, where did we do drums? Like, in a rehearsal room somewhere?
Yeah, using four SM57s.
Great little microphone.
A great little microphone. The whole thing would have been done on 57s probably, or 58s.
And, yeah.
But it was, yeah, I mean, like, it just sounded great. Like, really superb. And you know, he... What I like about Mike is not afraid to do what needs to be done. So he gave it a good whack of compression and, like, really drove them hard. And they sound amazing. Sounded absolutely awesome. That's the highlight of that Permission to Land 20 release.
Yeah.
By a long shot. So glad Robbie managed to pull it out of the bag.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? I remember when we went on holiday.
That and Pat Carty's interview.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. I love it. I love how we're having an argument within our about one of our songs with the guy who's doing the booklet.
What was the argument? What do you mean?
He said, like, just basically just like saying in writing on our 20th anniversary, you know, the forever edition of Mr. Land, saying that like Tolan Man is shit, and then us just steaming and saying, no, it's not. It's the best song. Like, there's an argument going. It's like that just doesn't happen, you know. Like,
I love Pat's writing those. He's just
great.
He is brilliant. I mean, it's so funny.
And I really threw a lot, and as did you, threw a lot at him timeline wise. I just couldn't, and he just figured it all out. He just worked it all out.
I think he used like one of those
AI.
He used a bit of AI, definitely. I think he was using one of those websites that tells you set list, or maybe it's setlist.fm or something like that. You know, have you seen that? Mm. Where you can find out what songs you played in, you know, the Balham Regent or whatever it would be, you know.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's probably people like Robert that actually contribute those bits of information. But it's amazing that it's there, you know. I always wonder how many gigs we've done. What do you reckon it is?
Well,
I mean, just wouldn't even know where.
Thousand gigs, maybe.
You think so? Yeah.
Maybe not 1,000. No. I mean, if you think about it, like, if you're doing 100 gigs a year, during a, you know, like, if you're doing, that wouldn't be unusual back in the day. You know, that's only 3 big tours of an album. Probably more realistic is probably around about 600 mark, I reckon. Maybe more. They mount up, don't they? You know, like even like summer festivals, it kind of.
Yeah, and also you forget about some of the things you've done, which you probably would include as, you know, categorise as gigs. Things like, do you remember doing Justin Cook's wedding?
Yes, I do. In that castle.
Yeah. Do you remember doing
Toby McFarlane's?
Yeah, Toby's wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember doing the wake for Sam?
Yes.
At the HQ Club.
Oh my God, yeah, wow.
Do you remember playing at some kind of... Oh, fuck. We played somewhere and it was like... we were on stage and the stage, weirdly, was not elevated. Quite the opposite. It was at the bottom of like... you know, like a courtyard thing where there's balconies on all sides, on all four sides of the stage going up. And then the huge sort of... cylindrical pillar in the middle of the room somehow, which I tried to climb up and didn't get very high. Remember that?
Vaguely.
Some kind of party, like a party.
Oh yeah, because we've done loads of those kind of things too. Yeah, you know?
And that's Villavallo from him was always saying that's where he first saw us, and it basically his memory is me trying to climb up a pillar. You know? we were playing Get Your Hands Off My Woman, and I was climbing up a pillar.
Do you remember playing the Jackass Party?
Fuck, I don't remember that, actually. Where was
Trafalgar Square.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and then you climbed up to the top of the balcony and high-fived, what's his name, the main one out of all that stuff.
One of the ones from there.
The one that does all the stuff.
I actually don't remember that now you said it.
Yeah, well, to be honest, they were distributing, the theme was like, it was like a medical theme, so they had all these nurses squirting.
We're talking about the same gig.
Oh, is that the same one?
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. Of course it is.
That really?
Yeah, now you said about the syringes, I remember it.
Yeah, yeah, you basically like, you'd sit, there was a medical thing, and then you lie back on it, and then these nurses would syringe this vodka substance.
So it must have got quite high on the pillar then to be able to high five them.
Yeah, yeah, you were right up there. I think even I was on the speaker thing at that point. I think we'd hit the syringes a bit too early.
Yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? It's very Moorish, that stuff. Oh, you mean, yeah, the other thing.
The vodka, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So, and then do you remember...
Remember?
Chalk hearts melting on the playground wall. Why am I doing that bowing? Do you remember loving on the floor in Belsize Park?
The band Bowie Could Have Been.
Yeah. How is so? Can you challenge me? See if I've forgotten anything.
All right. Corner Hotel, Melbourne.
Never forget that. Never forget that. That wasn't there a Guns N' Roses band playing before us?
That's right, yeah.
And so that's where I got that thing from. I nicked it from Stuart Quinnell, and I think he'd got it off Phoenix Nights or something, but he was in the dressing room. He had no eye line to the band, and when it came to the endings, he was doing this and trying to anticipate the final bang, you know, and I was like, just to see if you can feel it in the ether. Anyways, you know, you can get pretty close if you really understand a band, but it's a hard thing to do blind, you know. that's my only memory of that gig. I mean, Christy was there though, wasn't she? Or was that the one that she turned up?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Oh God, just so many. The funny thing is, like, I was going through all the I've just got millions, and I've kept every lanyard from every gig we've ever, every tour or festival that we've ever done, and even those are just in the hundreds and hundreds. And it's interesting. I'm glad I kept them because, yeah, you just like these things pop up and you just go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you remember the last time we were in Japan?
Was that, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? It was like 10 years ago or something?
It was a long time ago. Do you remember in Osaka, we were in this bar and then the
That
barman,
wasn't the last time.
Was it not?
No, that was the time before. Yeah.
Do you remember the ACDC, the Angus Young guy came, like, a Japanese Angus Young guy?
No.
Came jumping out from behind the bar when ACDC came on with a SG, just, like, miming the thing and kicking drinks over. And
wow. Yeah. No, I just don't remember that at all. Wow. I remember some other stuff about that night, but not that. I remember the Rock Bar in Osaka is what you're talking about, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
I seem to remember one time Ed and I...
Technically, that's not actually a gig.
Yeah. We ordered some octopus balls because we thought, never tried octopus balls before. I mean, Ed ate one, he didn't like it very much, so I threw the other one across the bar and it hit some kid in the face. Oh dear, those are the days, weren't they? Was that
at the restaurant where we were with Dave Will and you snorted wasabi?
I think David Will was there, but that was not the same place. That wasabi thing didn't happen in Japan, weirdly. I think that was...
What?
One funny thing about David Will, by the way, it's a big shout out to International David Will. He was a man who had a really difficult job, actually. He was sort of charged with... He was our international guy from Atlantic. And his job was to make sure that we didn't make any sort of cultural faux pas when we're travelling and playing in sort of different places and not really understanding what the etiquette and all that. So he was there to sort of help us navigate that stuff, wasn't he? But I remember him and I, we had a few drinks before one of the award ceremonies that he accompanied us at, and it was in this really fancy palatial hotel, and we were so drunk by the end of it. We were trying to get up the stairs. This is the day before our performance, trying to get up the stairs, and then Dave goes, hang on, I got an idea. And he just goes down on his hands and knees, and then he's climbing up the palatial staircase in the middle of this unbelievably grand hotel. And then I remember crawling up it, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that as well, because it's much easier. And then he looked around and went, yeah, this is it. This is much easier, like that. And that was, I was thinking, this is our international guy really showing me how to gracefully get up some stairs. In a... And then it was, yeah, but I mean, it was things like buying presents for the guys at the Japanese label and stuff, wasn't it? I remember one time we'd done, because we were such assholes, we were really over the whole like, oh, do we have to go and do another fucking awards ceremony? We were like that, and I think it was the German one, and we were sitting in a restaurant a couple of days before it. We were there, and so International Dave said, okay, so here's the concept, lads. It's going to be like the skyline of the city that we're in, and then you're going to see the spaceship from Permission to Land album cover, and it'll be over the top of the city, and then it will sort of hover above the venue that the award ceremony is in, and then a light will come down, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, we do this every city we go to. I mean, why does it have to be that song as well? And then International Dave, to his eternal credit, said, yep, you're right, we should do Curse of the Tollen Man instead. I love that guy. He's awesome. So funny. And he's actually at Cobalt now, so he works for my publisher, which is really cool. I love him.
That is cool.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Did you want to share any more anecdotes? We're at time now. We're done, I think.
You know, it's difficult to know where to start, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, the most memorable kind of haphazardness. We bumped into the Feeling, didn't we? When we were playing, you and I were playing Brian Cox's. Evening of the Infinite Monkey Cage.
Yeah.
Nibbler thing, remembering that T-Mobile. basically, it was kind of like a festival for the people that worked for T-Mobile. And it was, we were headlining, and I think the Feeling were on before.
No, the Feeling were headlining. Yep, we were supporting.
Oh, that
we
were the other way around. Yes, yeah. So we were on before the Feeling, but it was quite windy, and the actual stage was like this giant sort of inflatable canopy that went over the stage, and I'm sure it seemed like a good idea at the time, but they hadn't tied it down well enough, and the wind got up by the time the Feeling were on, and the whole thing blew off. I'm pretty sure, actually, they were on before us, because it came off and it took out Softy and nearly wrecked one of our guitars. And I remember them asking us, that, you know, this is, you know, the plane has crashed into the side of the mountain. What do you want to do? Do you want to? And we said, well, we'll just do it with the top off. We won't bother with the canopy.
Okay. You know, I don't.
Yeah, I do remember being the hero.
I remember Well, the roof definitely landed on Softy's dodgy leg, and it's never been the same since, actually, has it?
No.
What he should have done is rolled around going, oh, my back! Ah! And then we could have got some money out of him.
He has managed to father children, though, so that's good.
Every cloud. Yeah.
Every cloud. But yeah, that was an interesting one. But they all sort of merge into, you know. I remember the gun. Actually, topical, because we're playing with Guns N' Roses again. But Guns N' Roses at that racetrack in Italy was
Imola. Yeah,
Imola. Imola was a real highlight for us, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know?
And I don't know. I'm just really looking forward to playing again, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
you know, when you go and see a band, and sometimes it takes going to see someone else doing your job to remind you how great your job is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, wow, I actually get to do that. Mm. And you know, you forget what that feeling's like to actually be in the crowd and it doesn't even really matter who it is, or you know, it's just, I went to see the Lemon Twigs.
Oh, I love that band. Recently. Yeah,
fantastic. And weirdly bumped into them afterwards as well, which is a bit embarrassing because I was should we say 3 or 4 sheets to the wind by then, and I introduced myself as Dan Hawkins from the Darkness. Don't do that. Don't do that. No. So
and what did they say when this, did they go who?
Well, it's quite weird because this weird kind of like a hedge, but a round hedge.
Oh yeah,
and the wind was kind of like pushing it along.
Were they distracted tumbleweed?
Okay. Tumbleweed, yeah. I think they call it in America.
Did they make this sound? Oh no,
it was a bit like that. Yeah,
yeah.
Whatever that sounded, I can't actually hear it.
Okay, so
that was cool. No, they I was wearing a Big Star T-shirt, and they were admiring that, and you know,
what do they wear on stage? I heard somebody tell me that they were just in tracksuits and stuff last time they saw them.
They look very Sevs.
Did they?
You know, they look pretty cool.
There's one video that really I covered on here, and it was just like, they looked so awesome because it was really stylish satin clothes with weird cuts and stuff. Like what I'm wearing now, but more stylish and purpley. It was really cool.
Less brown.
It was a bit less brown, I'll be honest about that.
But you have to work your way up to brown, though, don't you?
Really? Yeah, this is the highest form of spiritual enlightenment, brown.
Bond Brown.
Exactly. Yeah. Justin Hawkins rides again. And with that, I wish to thank my guest, Dan Francis Rossi Hawkins from the Darkness. Cheers, Dan.
Peace out, brother.
Hey. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you liked it, spread the word. I'll appreciate that. See you next Monday for another episode. Cheers.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I can't wait to meet her. Oh my gosh.
Put your hands together for new Dr. Pepper Blackberry and Dr. Pepper Blackberry Zero Sugar.
There she is! Woohoo! Yeah! Oh my God. It's full Dr. Pepper!
With sweet blackberry flavor!
Dr. Pepper Blackberry, I'm obsessed with your succulent taste. Please marry me!
No! Marry me, or I'm gonna freak out!
Try new Dr. Pepper Blackberry.
It's a pepper thing!
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.